Gogo started the Kistlitter Ständerstadt with the help of Dollfuss on the 1st of December 1933, and the magazine was destined to attack both communism and Nazism. Now, what happens was that Gogo had the mission to read the articles that were being sent. And it must have been in 34, maybe 35, that he reads an article of a young man whose name he had never heard before, Viktor Frankl, clearly in his 20s, maybe 23, 24, something like that. And he says to himself, my goodness, that has value. That has value. It's a remarkable, the man has talent. And he publishes it. And the young man had been turned on and turned on and turned on for the plain reason that nobody knew who he was. You know, first you become famous, and once you're famous, everyone's publishing. And then something very beautiful happened. He knew that Nazism was imminent and was coming, and he tried to get visas to go to the United States. And he got them.
You're speaking of Viktor Frankl.
What?
You're speaking of Viktor Frankl, not Gogo. You mean Viktor Frankl?
Yes. And he got them. And he was very, very happy. He had just gotten married and said, you know, Mesteski goes to visit his father. And the father is at his desk and looks crushed and unhappy. And on his desk there is a piece of marble. And Viktor says, what's that? He said, today the Nazi destroyed one of the synagogues in Vienna. And I managed to save a piece of marble. And he sort of said, this is what is coming. What does he do? He goes to the toilet and tears up his visa. In other words, he felt, I cannot abandon my father. He had one for himself and his wife, but not for his father and mother. Then comes the 11th of March, 38. Hitler invades. Jews, father, mother, son, and his wife in concentration camp. All of them died except Viktor. Father died, mother died, his young wife, 20, 22. And he was there until the end of the war, from 38 until 45. While he was in jail, in concentration camp, there was one idea that was growing. I mean, already in the first article that he delivered, he gave to Gogo, you know, that somehow, if life has no meaning, there's no reason to live. And many people commit suicide for the very plain reason that they say, why should I live? And while suffering, like Solzhenitsyn, when in jail, was writing on little pieces of paper. He was working on a book. Comes out of jail, and it is published. Search for Meaning. Have you read it?
Yes, many times.
It's a masterpiece of him. Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Fantastic success. Translated into English, and it must have been in the 50s. I already knew Gogo, but it was before marriage, I believe. He comes to the United States to give lectures. He arrives in New York. What is the first thing that he does? Looks up the address of Dietrich von Hildebrand. Gives him a phone call, and he says, I don't know if you remember me, but maybe 15 years ago, you were the first one who published an article of mine recognizing that I have something to give. I've spent 7 years in a concentration camp. I'm out of it now. I wanted to thank you. I mean, these are things which are beautiful. And then we got married in 59, and then we went to Vienna and went to the university and visited him for a couple of hours. We had a very beautiful interchange, and he told us that he had married a Catholic woman and that he had a little daughter who was, but I mean, in other words, he had no antagonism, but he made it clear that after the Holocaust, you know, a Jew has to remain faithful to Israel. And then I don't recall that there was any contact. Then Gogi died in 77, and in 85, I had just retired, I was invited to give a talk, or several talks as a matter of fact, to the largest international congress on love and the family, something like that, in Caracas, Venezuela. 3,000 people attending. And so I gave my talk in English, and many people see we have not. And then someone translated it in Spanish, and I read it in Spanish, and it worked out beautifully. Spanish is, of all foreign languages, the one which is most easily married to my mouth. You know, to such an extent that if I say one or two sentences, I can cheat people, whereas in other languages you're going to say, well, you know, she's foreign born. At any rate, suddenly I bumped into them. There she was with his wife at the same congress. You know, to meet people, there are 3,000 people, it's not that easy, but I mean, and immediately he took me aside. We had maybe an hour talk. And his first question was, do you have a photograph of your husband? And I always carry, you know, one that you know beautiful. So I gave it to him. And we had a very, very beautiful, loving interchange. And that is the last time. He died, I believe, I forgot the date of his death. He was born, I do believe he was born in 3 or 4. And he died probably in the 90s, something like that.
Well, we got but, to hear him speak once at the Academy.
Yes.
Didn't we?
You can look it up on the internet, of course, there's no problem. Yes.
But he came to speak once at the Academy.
In
Liechtenstein.
When I'm in the fourth, that was, of course, in 90, early 90.
It must have been in 90, maybe 2 or 3.
So you met him?
Well, not personally, but we heard him, yes. It was a beautiful talk he gave on.
In German?
I don't remember.
I think it must have been German.
Well, you know, at any rate.
The most beautiful thing was his was the introduction. You know, Josef Seifert gave an introduction, praising him, of course, very highly. And then he, when he got to the stage, he thanked Josef for his introduction. And then he said how, I forget now, it's something to do with the fact that he can only feel that he hasn't quite lived up to his calling, that if of all the millions of Jews that were killed, he alone was survived, and he has always thought, this I have survived, and therefore that means I have a special task and obligation.
Yes, he said that too. He said
and that he that of course he didn't feel like he had lived up to that obligation. So it was a very moving way of responding. With humility to Josef's introduction. And then the talk was just about his general philosophy, which, as you know, is very much in harmony with Gogo's
someone
thought.
Someone who, after 15 years and 7 years in the concentration camp, and comes to Jungfernstadion, this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, because in some way, look, I'm at the end of my life. Something that I keep thinking about, I've never said enough thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm desperately trying to catch up, but it's not that easy. And I find it so beautiful because someone he can be say thank you after so many years for one good deed that Gogo did. And he did it not because he knew him personally, because it's worth it.